You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Marco Antonini. Marco, thanks for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Marco, and can you tell me a little bit about what you're working on?
Well, I am based in New York for the time being, and I'm transitioning between jobs. So for the past 5 years, I've been the curator and director at Nurture Art, which is a Brooklyn-based nonprofit gallery. In the future, I'm going to move to Philadelphia for a new job that I'm not allowed to talk to yet.
And so let's talk about your work at Nurture Art. Or is that what whatever you're involved in right now? Is it
well,
a project
that's been a large part of my career, I guess. Like, so that's 5 years of stuff we can talk about.
maybe how you began in Nurture Art. I know you started at, 2011 there.
I started in 2011 at Nurture Art, and before that I had been an independent curator and writer for a few years. And then I just saw this, the job posting and applied for it. They always wanted to do, I wanted to get away from the independent curating thing, which is really, scattered way of working, and you're everywhere and you're nowhere. And I always wanted to manage one single place, when I got the job, Nurture Art was very different than what it is today, I think. It's a nonprofit organization, a classic 501c3. They have a gallery, used to be in East Williamsburg and now is in Bushwick. They actually promote and champion the work of emerging artists and curators, which I was really, really happy about. And they also have this very interesting education program where they connect the artists and curators they work with public schools in Brooklyn. And the organization was, it had good bones and an interesting history. But I think, it was a little bit, handicapped by its position because it was in a part of Bushwick that was not really connected to the rest of the scene. I mean, not a lot of studios were around, not a lot of art galleries. So in our first year, we managed to move the gallery to close to the Bogart Street stop in Bushwick, which was then becoming the epicenter of, the art scene in that neighborhood. And I think that was very beneficial. We changed gallery and, we kind of connected with a lot of other great spaces that are operating that area. And the Bogart stop on the L train in Bushwick is surrounded by, dozens of art studio buildings. And that was pretty much, in 2012, I think, pretty soon. So over the past 5 years, I've been nurturing Nurture Art. It was initially my job was just the curator there, and then it became as an executive director as well. So I think I learned a lot in the process, not just doing programming and facilitating, other people's projects and my own, and producing my own projects, but also just running the space, doing board development, financial development of the organization, and ways to grow and ways to, emerge, which in New York is always complicated because there's so much competition at all levels in our field.
I'm glad you said that because I wanted you to talk about what Nurture Art is, which you have, but maybe we should talk also about the book project because there's two book projects that you've done.
That was one other thing. I think Nurture Art can be summarized in this way. I mean, it's a 501c3 nonprofit. It promotes the work of emerging artists and curators, and then connect these artists and these curators with public schools in Brooklyn so that they can have workshops and share their work with public school students. One of the most important things with Nurture Art is that most of the program, I would say 70% of it, comes from open calls. So we actually regularly put out open calls so that artists and curators can send us proposals of things they want to do with us. We gather a panel of experts, you know, pretty much like a little foundation would do when awarding a grant, and then select two solo shows, two group shows every year from this open call, and these become like sort of like, you know, the core of the program. You know, when I was working there as a curator, like I was creating basically three projects per year, two solos, and one summer show, you know. And I think the summer shows were like the first thing that I did there that was not so much in line with what they were doing before, and actually following the steps of the previous director, which whose name was Ben Evans, who already had experimented with this idea of like doing something like way more ambitious in the summer. He did something called the Bushwick Biennial, I think in 2009, and that went very well. You know, he organized a series of spaces in Bushwick to show a large exhibition together. So I started using the summers to re-energize the programming by having these large articulate group shows that would involve multiple venues or use our venue in a different way. And then the other thing that happened there were that basically I have an interest in publications myself, and I used to do fanzines, and I've been a writer and editor for like most part of my life. So I started producing not only exhibition-related publications, but also a yearly end-of-the-year catalog, let's call it, you know, like the catalog that summarizes everything we did there at Nurture Art. And these publications became an important part of what we did there. We tried to produce them really well, you know, like books. And so the summer projects, which were like larger, more ambitious exhibitions, translated well as publications as well. So we started having a series of like, you know, almost books, you know, coming out with these programs, and some of them have become, you know, important in defining, you know, like our the organization, and that's what they think when people think about the organization sometimes. I have to say, like, at some point, like, you know, we also experimented with only having publications. I mean, so there's one of these books that came out that was not an exhibition. And that's because we were like working at an exhibition idea. We realized that.
Well, but let me ask you, which book was that? Was that Golden Age? Okay.
Yeah. So that, you know, we were thinking about dedicating an exhibition to abstraction because although I don't have a particular interest in it as a, you know, as a form, I would say that it was impossible to ignore how much abstract painting and 2D work, but even sculpture and video as well, was being produced in Bushwick when we were working there. So I actually took it as a, I don't want to say it's a duty, but like, you know, I felt like we had to address this. I mean, like, you know, why do we see like hundreds and hundreds of artists working in this form and even exhibition venues that mostly.
But and just to be clear, you're talking about abstraction mostly in painting. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, I think I mentioned that. But yeah, it's important to be clear because it's not just any kind of abstraction, and you know, it doesn't take any form. I would say it's like maybe like, you know, 70% painting or drawing, and that's like some photo, some video, some sculpture. You know, but I would say it largely has to do with studio practice, and it largely has to do with the conditions in which artists produce work in New York, which is, you know, the small, overpriced studio that, you know, unfortunately in New York everyone's familiar with. But yeah, I'm digressing here. Yes, it was mostly like painting. Actually, we limited the scope of the book to painting because when tackling the subject, you know, the topic of abstraction, we realized it was really vague, you know, and it goes into like, you know, very philosophical places. So we actually self-limited sort of like, you know, to painting, to trying to keep the scope of the project compact and, you know, and doable. So yeah, when that book came out, I mean, that didn't correspond to any. You know, we just published that as a book. And one of my, you know, my biggest regrets is not having signed for an international distribution deal that we were offered for that book. which I didn't feel like doing because it was quite a stretch on our finances at that point. But I could have probably, saved somewhere else and like made that happen. And the book exists only as printed by Nurture Art at this point. It's been reprinted once already. I think maybe 500 or 600 copies have been sold, in our area. So it's sort of like a niche.
So let's talk about that book a little bit. I mean, I wish it was distributed more too.
It's up to your chart at this point. I don't work there anymore. So
how do you feel about what that book expressed? As you said, that wasn't a form you were particularly interested in. What did you learn from doing that book? Was there something that was that stood out to you about why people are doing
it? We learned a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's a great question because I always thought of it as a learning process, and it worked that way for me. I mean, first of all, because I had to start researching the topic, I mean, beyond what you just see in these galleries. And then involving other people was great. You know, so we structured the book in a way that would include practicing artists in the conversation, because we realized that there was like a lot of abstraction being made and like so work coming out, but there was very little literature. There was little writing in regards to that. So we singled out some really good texts, one by David Gears, one by Christopher Cahill, and Lane Relia, who just published Your Everyday Art World with the MIT Press. And one by Gregory Scholes, which you might know as well, you know, is the author of Dark Matter.
Sure.
So all of these critics, some of them are also artists like Greg and Chris, they wrote essays that I thought were like particularly significant in like framing this kind of work. So we took the essays and we republished them, but we also asked the authors to create a postscriptum to the essays, because they were all like maybe at least like 2 or 3 years old. So the postscript updated the ideas in the essays, and then both postscripts and essays were given to groups of artists, you know, some many of which like now actually are the kind of people who are making abstract paintings, you know, and worked in that key at that time, and we created roundtable style discussions about these essays and the postscripts, and the conversations were recorded, edited, and became part of the book. So you have like the critic's voice, the critic thinking about what, you know, she or he has written, and, you know, going back to, you know, their own words, and then the artist's voice and their interpretation and their take on that critique, you know. So there's an interesting dynamic inside the book, and I think, you know, we learned that nobody wants to be sort of like, you know, labeled or described or like pigeonholed in a style or in a way of doing work, which is pretty, that's a pretty easy one. I learned that this book might actually be unpopular because putting out a critique of, a certain kind of work in a neighborhood that is predominantly, you know, like, you know, where you can see that work is kind of touched on a lot of those, sensibility and their own ideas. So, but that was, because actually generated a lot of the conversation around this book, you know, and I think that's what we liked the most. Having talked, we had talked at, you know, at Nurture Art, and then we actually did a mini tour where we went to SCAD in Atlanta, Georgia, and to TAPS Art Center in Columbia. I talked about the book in Hawaii, of all places, at the University of the Arts, Manoa, PSA, Time Strikes Asteroid, and Independent Space that also operates in Bushwick. It was interesting to see what people had to say. And I think summarizing the book would be like really hard in 20 minutes, so let alone in the span of, you know, of 1 minute.
That was a lot that you've done. Now you're between things, and you're possibly moving like to this other unknown job that you can't tell us about, which is fine. What are you doing now? Are you working on any other writing?
I'm enjoying some time off, and I am studying, which is a luxury. I'm studying a lot of performance art, history, and history of dance, and in general, I'm looking more closely to like performance and multimedia work, because I think I've done an indigestion of 2D and 3D works, or you know, any sort of artwork that can exist in a gallery space. And I am, by the end of my tenure at Nurture Art, I was like looking constantly at things that are way more immaterial or temporary or you know, or impermanent or time-based. And I even started in an experimental program of performance at Nurture Art, which would go along the regular gallery exhibitions, and I was really enjoying working with the production of events rather than you know, curating exhibitions and, you know, and basically an object-based work. So I'm taking some time to do this before new job starts, and you know, I got married. We're expecting a baby. I mean, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That is a lot. Having a baby and everything else
it's not a bad time to be out of a job, honestly. I mean, or thing to be between jobs.
Well, it sounds like something's on the horizon. So is maybe I should ask you,
which is
really towards the end now. What are you reading now? Is it about performance art as well? Are those the kind of books you're reading now?
I'm reading a lot of like boring stuff, like, you know, art history book and sort of like, you know, catalogs of like survey exhibitions on, you know, including performance art, and in general, I'm interested in choreography and in the return of dance into the art scene, which has been a thing for the past like 10-15 years, pretty strongly so in Europe, and growing from like dance traditions and ideas that were developed here in the U.S. as well. But I'm also reading, I'm actually really enjoying it, you know, Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, which I've always heard about, this book. And, like, I got so much praise for this book. And I know a lot of American people, like, know it by heart, and it's a very common read here, but I'm not American. And I only moved here.
I don't think it's a common read here, but it's a read well known.
It's
a common read if you're interested in a kind of critical history. But that's certainly not what I was taught in schools as an American, or probably any other.
I love
student.
It. I'm loving it, and I always, you know, I picked it up because I really like this show that Harold Fletcher and Jens Hoffman curated a few years ago, which was called The People's Biennial. And I wrote something about that in Italian magazines, and they gave me a catalog, you know, a copy of the catalog back then. And the cover of that catalog is made to look like the cover of The People's History of the United States, but I didn't realize that was that, you know. The graphic designer had, you know, paid a homage to the cover. So when I saw the cover of A People's History of the United States in a bookstore, I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, this is where that comes from. So I picked it up, and I remember people mentioning it to me, and I really have to say it's mind opening. And I actually feel that we have, there's a huge need for a people's history of art history, you know, in a way. And to, you know, sort of, you know, to release art history from the institutional sources that have informed the way we see things, read things, and actually what we see and what we read, well, you know, for so long. And you know, this is it's a young art history this side of the pond, you know, here in the United States. So I think this is attainable. You know, it would be harder as you went back in time to like more, you know, lengthy and dense art histories. You know, I'm thinking about, I mean, I have two graduate degrees. My first degree is in medieval and early Renaissance art history. You know, rewriting something like that is like so hard, and it would take so much effort because the sources would be more scarce, etc. But I think we can do that with contemporary art easily, and I think it's already happening so much, and, you know, I welcome that a lot. So I think that's a book I would like to mention because I'm reading it right now, and it's giving me ideas that are beyond, you know, history and society, etc., but, you know, are informing the way I see artistic practice and art and the way art history should be, I guess, you know.
Mm. Absolutely. I think that's a great idea for a book, the People's History of Contemporary Art. That would be a...
Yeah. You should, maybe they're already working on it. I mean, that show was pretty great, the People's Biennial. That was an interesting concept, too. I mean, they actually traveled throughout the state in smaller cities, you know, like in important cities, but, you know, not the art centers. And they literally had, like, radio ads and like newspaper ads that would invite people to bring their work and show it to them in almost an antiques road how is it called? Antiques roadside?
Antique roadshow, right. Almost yes. Like antique roadshow, yeah.
I'm not a big TV person, but I know what that is. And so, yeah, almost in that fashion, right? And so in this way, they ended up meeting a lot of people that are totally great artists, but they wouldn't even try to like, get into a gallery or like, present their work in the art world, let's put it this way, right? And they put together a great show out of that system. And, I mean, it might seem a little populistic, you know.
It doesn't. I think what Jens did there was quite amazing. I interviewed
so
him
yeah.
about that, actually.
Oh, yeah, you too?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic thing, the People's Biennial and how that came together. You know, I think that could be part of what a people's history of contemporary art would be, but that's his angle was quite different. It wasn't so much historic, but as you're saying, bringing in people who typically weren't in the art world at all, as we know it.
I think they were trying to do something else there, which is something that I'm also thinking about a lot. They were trying to actually foreground the artwork rather than the artist, and this is something that is part of my current concern. You know, I'm trying to investigate the possibility of really talking about art as artworks and not as artists. Because the commercial art world and institutions, et cetera, they almost go for the person, for the individual behind the work, before than the work itself. And this is for a series of reasons that are like probably completely legitimate, you know, but that cuts out a lot of like fantastic work, you know, like, you know, artwork made by people who don't do it professionally, artwork made by people who did a little bit of artwork and then they left that career and moved on to something else, artwork made, you know, maybe accidentally almost, you know, or like as a, you know, a part of someone's life. So someone who doesn't have a consistency in their work usually doesn't get the same attention of a professional artist who is like looking and careful that their work kind of like always hits a certain standard, let's put it this way. But I think, you know, in that show, in the People's Biennial, like, you know, there was a lot of work that was probably part of, like, a body of work that would be weak in general, you know, the whole work, you know? Like, if you look at the whole work of that artist, but it was really a standout work in the context of a group exhibition. It's really hard to do this, you know? Like, it's really hard to foreground the work and the work first because...
It is. So you mean to separate the work from the artist entirely, so that we're really evaluating the work by itself and not thinking, oh, this is,
I mean, this
Picasso
is not something
Kunz
I have.
It,
exactly. This is not something I have, like, totally wrapped my mind around yet, but it is something I'm thinking about all the time. You know, like, if what we deal with and what I'm working is, you know, is artists or artwork. And you know, I think I oscillate myself between the two.
I want to thank you, Marco, for talking with me today, and I want to wish
thanks
you luck too. on your new work and possibly that book, and also your new child. That's really exciting and big.
My biggest project to date.
Absolutely, and an ongoing one. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.